out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 3rd of April, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and of course we are broadcasting at radioarian.com, and we're also HTTPS now, and we've also got two new HTTPS streams so that you can check out our podcasts on there. Of course, as it's Wednesday, I'm joined by Nat Danelaw. Nat, how are you doing today? Tuesday it is. I keep getting the day wrong. Nat, how are you doing today anyway, on this fine Tuesday afternoon?
Okay. You know, it's easy to mess up sometimes. Yeah, I'm doing fine. Been reading the news, been reading the newspapers, getting the facts down, you know, just keeping my ever aware nationalist eye on the sphere of public happenings, and quite a lot of things have been happening.
Yeah, have been. I was a little bit taken aback at first when you said the topic for today. You said you wanted to look at the Republic of Britain, and I was thinking, no, don't look at Britain. Can't you look at Canada? Please look at Canada instead. But I guess we must look at Great Britain and everything that's going on. Well, what is your take on Great Britain then? Should it really be called Great? I'm not quite sure any longer.
I mean, just as a quick reference to Canada, I mean, if we are to talk about a leftoid dictatorship, I think Canada is like the best example of anti-white politics. I think it's within the time span of 30 years, they managed to get the population, the white population of Canada, from 90% down to like 56% or something like that. It's absolutely preposterous about the demographic replacement going on right now in Britain and in Canada. But that is what it is. Britain is no longer Great Britain. I remember last time we mildly touched upon Britain, very mildly, I recall. And I actually went to Britain back in 2004. Believe it or not, I went to Britain in 2004 when I was just a young pup. And I went there and I got to see London before the grand demographic transformation. I mean, I remember back then I did see like a few homeless black hobos, and you know, I saw things like that, but I didn't make much of it. It was like, oh, there's a few homeless Negroes here. That's strange. That's not that back home. But you know, I got to see London while it was still like what you could call somewhat generic, gray, depressing looking London. But I got to see it. But I've always kind of looked at England with curiosity, especially as I became more and more well-read. I became aware of great, you know, martyrs of the cause like Eli Mosley and the Black Shirts, who, you know, will forever like echo in the glorious, in the echo of history for being men of great action. But with that being said, The People's Republic of Britain, the state that is now at this very moment taking the same methods in usage as the Eastern German regime called DDR under the Soviet Union, it's taking the very same methods in action. I've seen like plenty of posters from the London Metro where they are showing like, we, you know, things like, oh, we are watching you, the state is keeping an eye on you, report on normal activity. And even at schools, they're propagating these PSAs stating that if you see students or friends of yours doing illegal political activities, i.e. spreading national action propaganda, you must report them. How it is now at the very moment a duty, from what I've come to understand, for any public employee in the People's Republic of England, is that every public employee's duty to report wrong think, from what I've come to understand.
It is. It is. They've got the, I think it was a bill, something to do with diversity, equalities bill. And it says that every company that has a certain number of people, it's their duty to promote diversity and anti-racism. Therefore, it means that if anybody is a part of that company and they disagree with being replaced, or they say, well, I support nationalism, they support nationalist organizations, then they can be fired by their employer. And this isn't just public companies. This isn't just ones that are owned by the government or work for the government. This is any companies at all. And on top of that, we've got the silencing of people now as well, that they do underneath the saying that it's hate, that people are speaking hate, anyone that criticizes any of the minorities, anyone that calls into question what happened in World War II, then they're accused of being haters. And at the moment, you know, it's like these people that make these accusations are consuming themselves. We've got the Jeremy Corbyn's Labour Party, and they're squabbling among themselves over who loves the Jews the most. They're accusing Jeremy Corbyn of being an anti-Semite. And he was at an organization yesterday called Judas. I mean, what kind of name is that to call your advocates for Jews? They call themselves Judas. I guess at least they're being honest about what they are. And
it's a fitting name.
Yeah,
they're like the Judas of Britain, aren't they?
Well, you know, it's quite bizarre, actually, because the other Jews, the British Board of Jewish Deputies, that's what they call themselves, they're accusing Jeremy Corbyn of being an anti-Semite for going to this dinner that was put on by Judas. And apparently Judas are all anti-Semites, but they're all Jews. And they're accused of being anti-Semites. It really shows to you that it's not anti-Semitism. It isn't people being nasty about Jews. It's just what one section of Jewry doesn't like being said about Jewry. And it doesn't matter who it is that says it. They can still accuse them of anti-Semitism. It's absolutely ridiculous. Jeremy Corbyn can't do anything without being accused of being an anti-Semite. Even going to a Jewish dinner, he still gets called it. And when you're talking about London just then as well, we've just heard today there's been more murders in London this month than there have been in New York. And that's the first time that has ever happened in 200 years. And the head of the Metropolitan Police is suggesting that it might be down to social media. And this is the same woman the other week said, oh, London's always had a problem with Islamic grooming gangs. We had them, you know, going back centuries. So she is spot on with the politically correct nonsense and making sure she doesn't go anywhere near close to hate speech. I mean, she just lies her head off. I mean, these stabbings and these murders are all due to Negroes doing what Negroes do. It's got nothing to do with social media, but she knows that the government want to clamp down on social media. So she blames that. Yeah, it was Twitter and YouTube that caused it.
Speaking of stabbings, I read somewhere on Metropolitan statistics from the Metropolitan Police in the UK that in 2017 there were well over 35,000 stabbings. 35,000 stabbings. And I saw these people taking pictures of posters. There's lots of posters nowadays, like propaganda posters in the UK as of right now, which is kind of bizarre. Well, they showed this picture of a white guy who said that he was like riding a bike. He was sitting on a bike and it stated, I have dropped carrying a knife now for 5 years now. Isn't it time you do the same? And then they would have like bins for throwing in like their knives, throw away their knives into like these giant bins.
Yeah, that's entirely true. It's, you know, and they pay, they pay Negroes to set up youth clubs, set up radio stations, and all this is supposed to cut down on knife crime because it's all centred around the Negro ghettos. They even had one of the royal family, Prince Harry, and his new black girlfriend. They both went to visit one of these pirate radio stations that have been funded with the government's money that are there supposedly to stop knife crime. So they put throw all this money at it, and yet knife crime has gone through the roof. And the real reason for it is because Theresa May decided that stop and search was racist because they were stopping and searching far more blacks than they were whites. So they said, well, you can't racially profile anymore. And as soon as they stopped racially profiling, all the Negroes were like, right, great, we can start stabbing each other up once more and we won't get caught. And that's exactly what's happened. It's all to do with political correctness and not going after black suspects purely because they're black. You can't give a description of a black suspect anymore because that's racist. You have to say, oh, it was somebody with a red T-shirt on or white trainers. Can't actually say he was black.
I mean, the reality is, and I know that now, because our politicians are retarded and probably have autism, or maybe it's because they're all high on crystal meth and are in these very very significant groups of pedophile rings. It seems to me that they always... So they notice a pattern with stabbings. What do? They outlaw knives. Now, they did the same here in Denmark. The problem is that it's not the knives that magically, like a person get a knife in his hand and he's like, yes, I'm God, I can stab people. That's not the reality of how knives work. It's the people who take the knives in their hands. In our country, in my country here in Denmark, we had quite a lot of problems with... these overpass roads, where there were bridges on top of the roads, and these roads and there are these bridges near overpassing these, you know, motor roads where you can drive fast. There were lots of ghettos with lots of undesirable third world subhumans. And for some reason in these areas, well, besides the stabbings and the shootings, there seemed to be this weird tendency of rocks dropping down from bridges on top of and hit the cars driving underneath like these bridges. And it turned out to be like Somalis throwing like 10 kilogram rocks down from the bridges down on these cars. And yeah, I mean,
we have the same phenomenon.
Mentioned racial profiling.
We have that same, very same phenomenon. Rocks just magically falling off bridges and smashing onto cars. Yeah, we do have the same thing, and I suspect it is.
It's the social media's fault. It's all those.
Yeah, social media again.
World star hip hop is all that's fault. It's because these young, easily impressed young people, these young whippersnappers, they watch all these cool memes on the internet of like how to throw rocks on cars and how to stab a pregnant woman in the belly. They watch all these hilarious prank videos and they just want to imitate it. And of course, we can't racially profile that. That's impossible.
They would never think of doing it unless they'd seen it before on the television, would they? It's got nothing to do with the fact that that's the way that they behave in their homelands, and they've never had a system of law, and they go so far as to actually eat one another in their homelands. They have that little respect for life. And just take one of their heroines, the great hero Winnie Mandela, that they're all falling over themselves today because she's passed away. She was a terrorist and she was well known for putting rubber tires around people's necks and setting fire to them, pouring petrol over them and then lighting it with a marijuana joint. That's what she's famous for. And yet they're saying, oh, she's a lovely woman. She brought an end to apartheid. They just won't accept the truth of what's going on. You mentioned that they banned the knives. Well, they banned cleaning products now because they've taken to throwing bleach in people's faces and acid in people's faces. So now they're banning the cleaning products rather than banning the creatures that are actually doing this. And I can remember when I was a child, they still used to give pen knives out at school. This is before the country was ruined by diversity. You know, kids would have a penknife and you would look forward to being old enough to have your own penknife and being able to use it as a tool. And a knife is a tool. And yet, thanks to the vibrancy, knives, it's now seen as a weapon. If you have a knife, and it's really annoying because, you know, you need a knife to cut a bit of string, cut a bit of wire, cut a bit of cloth. You know, you've got to do repairs. You know, do you know what I mean? You need to do repairs on your car or on your push bike or on your clothing, and you can't carry a knife. You know, the most useful tool, I think, that man has ever come up with is the knife. And the Negro just turns it into a weapon. We can kill people with this. Yeah, great. You know, the machetes is their favorite one that they use.
Yeah.
And it's the white man that suffers. Our freedoms.
But it really shows how their priorities are completely messed up. And of course, we all know this is deliberate. This is all deliberate. This is typical Western, quote-unquote, democracy's strategy of dancing around the problem, avoiding addressing the problem, avoiding making natural repatriation programs, avoiding doing proper political work. They avoid doing this. And instead, they make problems out of nothing. They say that it's all environment. They say it's weird items that causes the problems and not the people wielding the items. Now, regarding that, I mean, let's just talk about the outlawing of the perfectly moderate nationalist organization, National Action, that they literally deemed into a terrorist organization for no apparent reason on bogus charges. Just to shut up political opposition. That is how insecure this political system is. The establishment of the Brits, both the Tories and the Labour Party are panicked, and they're so insecure about anything. It is often said the more pro-gun laws a nation is, the more insecure a government and a regime is in its own populace. Which actually is kind of funny if you think about it, because Adolf Hitler had very lenient gun laws, which actually allowed the average citizenry in the Third Reich to actually have their own firearms at hand.
In Switzerland, every house has its own gun in it. You know, hardcore weapons, and they're all taught how to use them. But they don't seem to have the same problems with people getting shot that you get in countries that are filled up with diversity. I mean, you mentioned National Action there. They got banned as terrorists, and you're quite right. They were never accused of any violent crimes. The reason given for banning them is because they were homophobic, they were anti-Semitic, they were racist, and basically because Amber Rudd didn't like them. So it was basically a completely feminist way of looking at it. The woman's emotions were, she doesn't like this group, so we will ban them. We will call them terrorists because I don't like them. No, there was no actual evidence of any crimes that had taken place. And since then, they've used it to then go after other nationalists that had nothing to do with the organization, even when it was
like Britain
operating.
First, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, they'll bring this into it. They've locked up Britain First. Britain First were due to go on their first political campaign. So they were very keen to get them locked away in prison so that they couldn't go on their political campaign. I think that's what was to do with that. But yes, they have. They've said that Britain First are far right. They're the same as National Action. They should be banned as being terrorists as well. And they've been locked up basically just for trying to alert the community that there was a Muslim gang rapist there that had been let out on bail. They weren't put on remand. When you're put on remand, it means you are put in a prison until your court case, because you're a threat to the public or because they think you're going to abscond and disappear. And these gang rapists, they knew that they had committed this gang rape because they had all the forensic evidence for that to prove that it was them. It was their DNA on this girl. And they just let them out. And they were still working in the same kebab shop where young girls were going in every day to buy their kebabs or their chips on the way home from school, what have you. And these Muslims were still there. And Paul and Jada were trying to warn the community that that is what is going on. And they were locked up for it. And as I say, there's been calls to have them banned as a terrorist organization. They're trying to relabel what our grandparents and even our parents thought was quite normal as terrorism, as being extremist. You have this, you also have the concept of the non-violent extremist, which is what David Cameron and Theresa May came up with, which means people that have never actually broken any laws. It's just that they don't like what they're saying. It really is. It's just like what happened in the Soviet Union, where they would say that people were mad if they talked against the government, and they'd have show trials and they'd lock them up in asylums. And as we know, in the Soviet Union, they had the death penalty for anti-Semitism. I mean, they'd love to have that here. They've redefined anti-Semitism as it is, so that it can be anything whatsoever that a Jew says it is. The wording itself, I'm paraphrasing here, but it says that somebody could be saying something that may sound as if they're being very positive about Jews, but if a Jew says, oh no, that's anti-Semitism, it's anti-Semitism. So this gets around the thing that sometimes happens when you have a Jew saying something like, isn't it amazing that we've got gay marriage pushed through, and aren't we great because we were behind gay marriage? And then if someone like David Duke says, the Jews are responsible for pushing gay marriage through, oh, that's anti-Semitic, even though it's the very same fact. And they've managed to get that put into law now. So everyone is just working for the Jews. And it couldn't be more open and obvious than when they're telling Jeremy Corbyn that they're not even going to speak to him unless he first agrees to obey all their demands. And their demands are that he throw people out of the Labour Party for criticising Israel, that he has a special army of people on social media to police the Labour accounts, and he's got to have special trials of people accused of anti-Semitism, and also everybody in the Labour Party has got to go on a course to learn just how harmful and terrible anti-Semitism is. And all these demands this one small ethnic minority group made on the leader of the opposition and said, you've got to answer to this, you've got to do all of this, otherwise we're not even going to speak to you. And they're that powerful, he knows that if he didn't speak to them, the Labour Party would be completely finished and he'd not get any more money. And it really couldn't be any more open. I mean, you call it the Republic of Britain, but it's the Semitic Republic of Britain. It's not the Islamic Republic, because it's Jews and it's Muslims that are the source of the problem. So it's a Semitic Republic, and the white people, we're all the dhimmis or the goyim slaves. And we can't even speak up against it without being accused of hate. Well, it's not hate, it's love for our own people and wanting to put our own people first, which is all that the Jews and the Muslims are doing, really. You can't blame them for doing it, but we can blame our government for bringing them here and giving them equal citizenship with us, which they never should have had in the first place. That's what it's about.
Precisely. And I mean, isn't there historically in the Labour Party, I remember reading that there has been some cases of like organized child abuse rings in the Labour Party.
Lots.
And I believe there's been the same with the Tories, has there not?
Yes. Yeah. Both of them. The Labour 25, there's a great long list of people involved in the Labour Party, and they supported pedophile rights at the same time as they were supporting gay rights. And a Liberty Group, I think they got something to do with it. And of course, also Cyril Smith and the guy that brought us into the EU has been associated with all of this. And there's always been this culture of buggery with the Conservative Party going to their private schools. There's always been a joke about each one of these pupils at the private schools. They have someone called a fag, which is supposed to be their servant, and sometimes they would bugger the fag, basically. So all these top toffs that go to Eton, most of them have been buggered. You know, it's a really sad state of affairs, what our aristocracy has devolved into. And then you've got the Jewish Talmud that says, oh, it's perfectly fine to bugger young boys. It's perfectly fine to engage in pedophilia. You've got the Quran that says the same. And we know about the culture that has. And then you've got the genuine British peasantry that is straight up and traditional, wants nothing to do with this, and wants all this filth removed from our country. And, you know, we're very placid people. We're not likely to get up and riot. I mean, we don't behave like the blacks. I think the last time we did was a peasant rebellion, something like that, 16th, 17th century. That was the last time we actually got up and rebelled. But I think if we did, you know, there would be hell to pay. If you think what's in our blood, Anglo-Saxon, Norman, the Danes, you know, Vikings, and the Cymru put up such a good fight against the Saxons as well and defeated the Romans twice. You know, it's not like we don't have a pedigree and a heritage. It's just that we lack this fire at the moment. I mean, we need to get that fire back and start fighting back. But I do see, you know, I do see a movement on the civic nationalist side, which is useful because they're like, gatekeepers to us. They open the gates up for people that find their way to ethno-nationalism. It's like with kids. First off, they have mother's milk and then they move on to meat. Well, the civic nationalists are like the milk that the kid has first before he moves on to the meat. And there's a big uptick in that. We've got Generation Identity, you've got Tommy Robinson, you've got Anne-Marie Waters and her For Britain party. And give it a few months and the people that have joined those parties are going to be wanting something more radical. They're going to be moving towards more racial ideas. And then I think we'll, you know, our ranks will then be swelling as well. So I do see that there is change in the air, but it's still some time off yet. And there has to be change in the air. Otherwise we're going to end up in a bloody civil war. And that's what we're trying to, you know, that's what we're trying to avoid, isn't it?
I mean, from what I've come to see, and I think ultimately this is going to bite the British government in the ass at some point. If you try and crack down on the national opposition, and if you don't give the national opposition any leverage whatsoever in terms of airing their frustration and anger, you're going to end up with something like Sweden, where you now have one of the most, you know, titanistic revolutionary national socialist movements in all of Europe, you know, growing rampantly, who actually opposes Swedish police and, you know, secures order and actually has all of these very, very interesting programs and interacting with the communities and getting elected into municipalities. You know, that says that's the reality. And if you deny the national opposition this, you know, it's just going to grow very strong, like in Sweden, as I mentioned. But the danger is, however, if they give us leverage in some way, we're going to end up with a sad state of affairs, like the Danish People's Party, or like in Sweden, how the Swedish Democrats function, where they're just like kind of an impotent, what could you call it, outlet for nationalist ideas that never really leads to anything. And it just leads to people and politicians becoming living bread politicians, feasting upon the frustrations of the people without actually being able to do anything due to the fact that parliamentarism never allows legitimate political change.
Well, yeah, they're the ones that are radicalizing people. It's the government that are radicalizing people. You imagine you don't really know any much about nationalism and you're a bit annoyed at immigration and, you see a link somewhere online that takes you to a video on YouTube and then it says, oh, you can't watch this in your country. Every other country in the world can watch it. You know that this video has been made by somebody else who is British. It's a half hour video and he's talking to other British people, but you're not allowed to watch it. I mean, that is going to really rile people up, isn't it? And they're going to think, hang on, I'm being censored. Something's being hidden from me here. The government is not allowing me to hear what everyone else can hear. And these are my own countrymen talking and I'm being banned from hearing it. And then they could look up something like Ernst Zundel on a talk show in America and discover that, yeah, even that has been banned. Daytime talk shows have been banned with Ernst Zundel talking about the Holocaust in America. And then you're going to think something's seriously up here. You know, they're not banning pornography. The soap operas are full of homosexuals and transsexuals. They're not trying to prevent the population from having their morals corrupted. They are trying to hide these political ideas from us, which is straight out of 1984. It's straight out of the Soviet Union. And it's everything that we've always been taught we were against. We've always been taught that, you know, we're the center of free speech here and we have our speaker's corner and all the rest of it. And up until recently, people didn't really know that had been taken away. Obviously, there's been a lot of publicity with Martin Selner, Brittany Pettibone, Lauren Southern. But 4 years ago, Joshua Bonehill was stuck in prison for 4 years for a cartoon of the Jews. And then after that, they gave him another 2 years for a cartoon picture of Luciana Berger. You know, and nobody said anything about that. But they do now.
The reality is, they only really talk about how great globalism is and how great free speech is as long as it benefits them. But when things seem to get a bit out of their hand and how things seem to point in a different direction than their favor, that's when they see all of a sudden that it's a problem. When globalism means that they get millions of new voters from third world countries, they're in favor of it. But when it means a inflow of new nationalist ideas and methodologies, that's when it kind of becomes problematic, and that's when they crack down.
Yeah, definitely. And that's what it's all about, really. The international nationalism, as we've spoken about before, as we're doing right here on this podcast right now, Nat, British nationalism and Danish nationalism. Well, thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Florian Geyer. God bless and hail victory.